On today's episode of Insights, what is the ideal blog post length? We share a lesson you can learn from Amazon, and we give you our take on what impact Instagram's new update will have on your business. Today's episode of Insights is brought to you by Haley Marketing's Hot Summer Deals. Looking to fire up your marketing or recruiting? Let us help light the fire. To learn more about Haley Marketing's 8 Hot Summer Deals, visit haleymarketing.com/summer. This is Insights.
Welcome to Insights. Tips and best practices from the insiders at Haley Marketing. Insights will provide you with the tools you need to master your social media, digital marketing, and employer branding. Your hosts for Insights are Brad Biley and Matt Lozar.
What's up? This is Brad Biley, and welcome back to another episode of Insights, the podcast built to help you with your recruitment and digital marketing. As always, I'm joined by Haley Marketing's Director of Recruitment Marketing, Matt Lozar. Matt, how are we doing this week?
We're doing well, Brad. We're getting into that hot part of summer. We're enjoying it as much as we can because we know what's coming. But today, I think we have some really good topics, going back to some basic ones and then jumping on an Instagram topic that maybe caused some discord here in the old podcast studio.
Well, Matt, let's get right to it.
Content Blueprint.
Matt, I want to ignore SEO for this question because I'd love to bring Dan Hong from our team back to chat about that in a future episode. But from a content creation standpoint, how long should the ideal blog post be?
That's a good question, Brad. And I'm going to go back to, you know, a writing tip that I've heard a long time ago. This is, you know, not strictly staffing related or recruiting related. It's follow your style almost as a speaker and your personality. I feel like a tip I heard a long time ago and I think is very accurate is when you read content by someone, you want to be able to sound like they're speaking to you. And I think your writing style has to match that. If it's a longer post or a shorter post, you know, how are you able to communicate clearly to your audience the point you want to make?
For me, the ideal content length really doesn't exist. We need to think about just answering that question, being of value to the end reader. It might be long-form content over that 1,000-word, 2,000-word threshold. It might be short-form content, answering a question in a quick 200, 300 words. But when I think about the ideal content length, I think, Matt, you make a great point here. It comes down to understanding what you're trying to say and conveying that message in as succinct a way as possible, but doing it on your terms, doing what you ultimately want to do.
And it's trying to find that balance because in the digital world, we don't have a limit.
Sure.
We don't have the limit that we had in the written world. Or as my 10th grade English teacher, Mrs. Zita Nific, said, diarrhea of the pen is what you would have. And even though you were typing it, it was still in a paper, but we're not confined as much in the electronic digital world. So being able, and this is something I struggle with a lot, being able to write something succinctly and clearly so an audience that isn't as familiar with your topic can understand it works very well.
And when we look at data at Haley Marketing Group, and what we would challenge you to do is also look at the data of your blog, what we see across the board is that there's really not a defined word length that equates to success on a blog. I know a lot of SEO specialists, and as I mentioned, I want to bring on our SEO strategist, Dan Hong, later to talk about the length of content from an SEO standpoint. A lot of individuals will say, well, you need long-form content to rank well at Google. I can tell you from personal examples at Haley Marketing Group that we have a short-form article right now that is outperforming any other content that we've produced this year because it's indexed really well in Google, it's answering a great question, and it's of utmost value to that end user. So Google is favoring it above others. This always comes back to answering the question the best that you can. Google wants to be a search engine that returns answers. If you have the best answer to that question, you're going to get ranked. You're going to show well.
So another tip could be try different lengths of blog posts, of content, because maybe your audience wants to see 300-word blog posts or 800-word blog posts. And Brad talks about answering the question. That's a really good answer because there probably isn't a set length. Because if the question requires just a quick 200-word post, go with it. If it requires 3, 4, 5 subsections, then find a way to break that down so you can answer that question, develop your points, and provide really good takeaways for the audience coming back to your blog posts.
And we've said that before, that you don't know what type of content is going to resonate well with your audience. It's just like the evening news. Some people might get their news from Twitter in a real short tweet. Some people might watch the evening news at night, and some might read the entire newspaper. If you have a candidate coming to your website, you might find that some candidates want that long form, really detailed blog post, and others just want to get the answer to their question and they want to get on with their day. So Matt, I love the point of really thinking through different forms of content, creating this library of content, this arsenal of content, so that individuals with different specialties, with different needs, have a resource available to them.
And then digging back to Brad's point of looking at your analytics, looking at your data, looking at the results, do more of what's working or adjust what isn't working. And your content plan that we talked about way back, I think it was in episode one, your content calendar for the upcoming months or quarter or for the year, you know, maybe you are working on 300 to 500 word posts and that's not working. So maybe try one or two that are 750 words, or maybe try one that's 150, 200 words and see if it resonates with your audience. So it's, there's no set formula, I think, other than just looking at the question, looking at your past data, and putting in, you know, 3-4 different factors into coming up with that right formula for your website, for your social content that you're sharing on social, and for the audience engaging with your blog posts.
We're going to take a real quick break. When Matt and I get back, we're going to share a lesson you can learn from Amazon.
Hi, this is David Stearns, CEO at Haley Marketing. It's summer, and that's our favorite time of the year. So to celebrate, we're having hot deals on several of our most popular services, including websites, blogging, video marketing, recruiting, digital dominance, and our award-winning content marketing service, Haley Mail. Want to know more about our hot summer deals? Check out haleymarketing.com/summer.
Social reach.
I want you to think for a minute about the last time you were on Amazon. Chances are, once you left Amazon, the product you were looking at showed up again on Facebook a few days or even hours later. That's called remarketing, and your staffing firm can deploy the same technology with your jobs from your website. Matt, I want you to walk us through remarketing.
The ads that follow you around the internet. It's something we say to prospects or clients. It's something one of my, you know, favorite people I talk to that we work with out in California, he says he loves to have about his staffing agency. It's creating the process. So when somebody goes to your website, let's say today, you have the right code, the right programming code, the right website code installed on your website. So then once they leave your website, when they go back onto the internet later today, next week, next month, the advertisement campaign you have set up shows up on their device or on their laptop or on their tablet or on their desktop computer.
And if you think about what you're doing right now to generate leads and generate traffic into your website, whether that's through social media, email marketing, search engine optimization, whatever you're doing to get candidates or prospects back to your website, if you're not deploying remarketing to target them on the way out the door, you're really missing out on a huge opportunity. You're investing all this marketing dollars, all these recruiting dollars into getting traffic to you. What we need to do, as Matt said, is install this remarketing code so that when individuals are on their way out from your website, we continue to funnel them back to your domain and back to your homeland.
It takes a long time to make a decision in terms of converting. It could be a job application. It could be buying a car. It's the old adage was about 6 to 12 touch points or impressions, you know, probably a decade or two ago. Now it's, I've seen 17, you know, 15 to 20 wouldn't be a shock to me, because it's easier to have impressions, because in the digital world, it's easier than just having a physical touch point. It's also a lot more noise. There's more people advertising. So you just have to find ways to stand out from the crowd and from your competition to have those 10, 15, 20 touch points to make that impression, to stay top of mind, to lead to a conversion when your audience is ready to convert.
So you might be thinking, well, why would I deploy remarketing, or in what situations would I deploy remarketing code on my website? At Haley Marketing Group, and really thinking about your own goals, you really want to either generate more applications or more job orders. So from an application standpoint, maybe it's putting that remarketing code on your job board. And then from there, Matt, what would happen?
Somebody goes to your job board, we said today, like, you know, Brad has an example, and then that job candidate or potential applicant goes onto their device, or they will see the ad following them around. If it's on Google, Google has what's called a display network. Their display network is 2 million websites. So all of those banner ads that you see when you go to, could be a local newspaper website, could be any other website that's in Google's network, those banner image ads along the sides, along the top, that can be your company and your job posting that follows the interested candidate and applicant around, so that maybe they didn't want to apply right away because they didn't have time. Maybe they were in the supermarket line or someplace they didn't have more than 2 minutes just to search around, but they came across your job the first time. Now that you have them tagged on that device, your ads are going to continue to show up in their feed so you can make those touch points to get them to the conversion point.
Right. And ultimately, if somebody isn't applying when they first hit your job board and they look at that opportunity, maybe they're going to a competitor. This remarketing code would allow them the opportunity to see your ad to drive them back to you instead of your local competition. Matt, from a client or a prospect standpoint, maybe it's putting that remarketing code on a services page or on a requested employee page so that when a prospect comes over to the site, they're not ready, they don't know what to do yet, but they leave, they continue to see that staffing firm.
Yeah, Google and Facebook allows you to segment out those audiences if you want. So you could create, you know, your overall website audience, but then you could have a segment of the people that just went to the job board. Or as Brad said, a segment of the people that just went to an employer's page on your website. Because a common question we get is, how can we only show ads to candidates or to clients? And if somebody just comes to your homepage, we have no idea. It's literally impossible to know if it was Matt the job candidate or Brad the staffing owner. So being able to create audiences based off the target pages on your site, that can help you create that client audience. So the people that go to, you know, why XYZ staffing or work with us, you know, we can help you fill your job orders. That's the pages you want to build your audience off of to build that client audience and then eventually get them to a conversion page to grab their contact information as a sales lead.
So to wrap this segment up, when we think about remarketing, what it is when you go to Amazon and you look at that product and then you leave and you see that ad for that same product follow you around the internet, it's that remarketing, it's that tracker ad that's following you all across the internet. We can do that in the staffing and recruiting industry. By deploying this remarketing code on your website or on your job board, what you can effectively do is make sure that as individuals are coming to your website, they're tagged with a cookie on their machine so that when they go out to Facebook or, as Matt said, Google, they continue to see ads for your staffing firm instead of your local competition. Getting that repeat traffic back to your website, making more sense out of the marketing dollars that you're spending, and ultimately creating this funnel where traffic just comes to your site and continues to cycle back to your website.
Seen and heard.
Matt, Instagram is making a change to the way the social platform behaves in 7 countries. That's Australia, Brazil, Canada, Ireland, Italy, Japan, and New Zealand. In a test, the platform has removed the like counter from user posts. How do you feel about this?
I want to know why.
You want to know why?
Yeah.
I think I know why.
Okay.
I think that Instagram is tired of being a vanity platform. That Instagram is tired of being exclusively about likes and the influencer mentality.
Okay. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, and it is a little bit of a drug because I have taken a step back, and if you post a picture up there, you do like to see how many likes you get.
Sure.
It's a little bit of a self-gloss or that vanity metric to where if my post only gets 10 likes or 100 likes, it's a little bit of a drug, and I think Instagram is, some people probably take that a little too seriously. Like for me, it's, you know, whatever, I just didn't post good content. But some people, you know, really kind of take that engagement number and have it very seriously. So if Instagram just becomes a place that you post content, I think that's more just a mindset change of people being able to go to Instagram and just not look for the likes. It's just seeing images or videos.
So Instagram was created to basically be a photo album, right? It's a place where you can upload your photos, you can document what you're doing, you can share your experiences and your journeys through life, essentially, on this platform. And for me, I think what ended up starting to happen is this influencer mentality started to take over, where if you don't get 40 likes on a post within the first hour and a half, you're contemplating taking it down because it's not, quote, good enough, right? So I think that ends up leading to a lot of vanity, a lot of concern for the end user. And from a staffing firm and from a business standpoint, you can't compete against those models. I mean, you can't compete against the Kim Kardashians of the world as a staffing firm. You just can't. So this move, from an Instagram standpoint, I think it levels the playing field. Sure, those posts are being seen by more people. The Instagram influencers still have a larger network. But if individuals don't know how many people are liking or engaging with content, then the best content just continues to resonate well. It's not about the number. It's about the value of the content.
So how will Instagram decide to decide what to show me in my feed? Will it go back to chronological order? Because past Matt really loved chronological order on Facebook and Instagram.
I think Instagram's still going to run the data behind the scenes. I don't think they're getting rid of that number or getting rid of that metric. They're still going to track all of that and use that to their advantage. I think it's just what the end user sees.
So we'll be able to like it. It just won't tell us how many people have liked it.
Exactly right. Okay. So what will happen then is if your staffing firm is posting content, great question, Matt. If your staffing firm posts content, and this, again, is just a beta test in 7 countries, not for the United States yet, but if you were to post something on Instagram and somebody liked it, the other users on Instagram won't see how many people have liked that. So for me, it eliminates the vanity of Instagram, brings it all back to the community, and brings it just to what Instagram wants you to do, is to bring individuals closer together through photos and videos.
So when I post something on Instagram, it will get likes.
Correct.
I will see how many likes.
Correct.
But Brad won't see how many likes.
That's exactly right.
That's interesting, because I think one of the points Brad said was really, really strong, and it's a struggle we have in staffing and recruiting, because there's only so much engagement available. As Brad said, you're competing with the influencers of the world, the politics of the world, the sports of the world, you know. You can post something, you know, Justin Bieber, Kim Kardashian, Donald Trump, Dallas Cowboys, like their engagement's going to be through the roof. And that's what's, I think, very challenging in this industry of staffing and recruiting, is it's just not as interesting of content. Like, we can make good content here and there, like showing content of your office, best of staffing, anniversaries, birthdays, company parties, company outings, you know, team summits. That's the kind of content that can work really well. So not having those likes displayed to other accounts will definitely change the way that content is interpreted. But I also think what's important is if you see you're still going to see how many likes are on your content, then we want to post more of that. And that's still a piece of data that's available for anyone that posts on Instagram. And we'll see if it rolls over to Facebook and Twitter too. But Instagram's, you know, testing this out right now. So what can you do with that engagement data coming in to still continue to make the right decisions based on the insights available?
Yeah, and there's data and scientific research that shows posting on social media creates a psychological spike. You want to know whether or not your friends like what you're posting. So the fact that the user can see that is still great, but for me, I really want to just come back to the fact that it levels the playing field. And it makes it all about the content, so that individuals aren't liking things just because they know a million other people liked this. Good content will always cut through the clutter. I don't care who you are.
Correct.
Good content will always cut through the clutter. So as a staffing firm, this levels the playing field for you to create good content that can compete against the influencers of the world. If you're creating value for job seekers in your local market, if you're sharing feel-good imagery of your team, you're sharing good stuff, you know, quote, finger quotes there, it will cut through the clutter. And that is important to remember.
Because it gives you the chance, just because a popular account posts content and has a million likes already, if we see that, we're going to like it because we're more inclined to. So Brad's saying, just because the content's there, the quality of that content is what's going to set apart the engagement. And if you have strong engagement, it receives more impressions.
So to wrap this up, if we think about what Instagram means for the staffing and recruiting industry, we've talked about Instagram in past episodes about what you should be sharing on Instagram. But really, this change, and again, it's just a beta test in 7 countries, so it's nothing official right now in the United States. For me and for Matt, as we talked here throughout the segment, it levels the playing field for the staffing and recruiting industry and for all businesses on Instagram. By not having a vanity metric as the core function of the post. When you can't see how many people have liked a piece of content, ultimately the content stands out on its own. So we need to create good content that adds value to the end user, that adds value to the applicant or the prospect. And from there, I'm going to say it one more time, good content will always cut through the clutter. That's our show, and thank you for listening to another episode of Insights. If you found this episode valuable, we ask that you please tell just one coworker about it this week. Have a question for us? You can tweet us at Haley Marketing and let us know what you're thinking, or email info@haleymarketing.com. And of course, if you need a hand with your marketing or recruitment marketing initiatives, we would love to help. You can check out haleymarketing.com to get in touch with our team of marketing educators. For my podcast partner, Matt Lozar, this is Brad Biley. I'll see you next time.